Welcome to Next Steps, a podcast from Black Hawk Church. We believe that following Jesus is a lifelong journey. So no matter where you're at, there's always a next step to take. Each week on this podcast, we'll create space for real conversations about the questions we wrestle with, the challenges we face, and the hope we find in Jesus. Our goal isn't to have it all perfectly figured out, but to walk faithfully towards Jesus together. We're so glad you're joining us. Let's dive in. Hey friends, and welcome to episode 3 in our series on Advent. This is week 2 of the Advent season, and so we're focusing on the theme of peace and peacemaking. I'm back again with some of my favorite people, Matt Wilhelm and Isaiah Wu.
Hey.
Two of our worship arts staff to discuss the topic. So how are we doing, guys?
You know, it's going. You know, just ready for the holiday. Like, I'm ready to go home and chill.
Yeah, as we're recording, we are heading into Thanksgiving week. Yes. So you guys have already experienced that. Hopefully your family dynamics fared well through that situation. but we're praying
for you
either way.
We all just laugh. Oh my gosh,
yeah. Nuance.
I was just divulging to these two before we started recording that I was literally dealing with some family dynamic fun right before, and the holidays haven't even come yet.
Fun.
So.
It's a thing.
Praise God.
It's a thing.
All glory be to Christ.
Glory be to Christ. We were in the east side this morning watching back some big projects we have been working on for Easter. Leave it vague. Because we can.
Yeah.
Just leave it vague.
A little teaser.
Indubitably. It's good to conversate, to pontificate with you guys this morning.
Matt.
This afternoon. Today.
I dare you to get that on a Scrabble board.
Yeah.
Pontificate?
Mm-hmm.
I love Scrabble. Probably couldn't do it, though.
That would be tricky. I'd be impressed. I'll give you this seems to be the ongoing bet around here with Matt Wilhelm, is that he'll win Chipotle. If you can evidence to me you get pontificate to fit on a Scrabble board, I will buy you Chipotle.
Okay. Incredible. Corey Davis still owes me Chipotle with interest. she has not paid. Dang.
Called by name.
Just, yeah. Oh.
It comes up frequently through the halls of Black Hawk.
I've let it go for the recent months. As we enter the holidays, I'm letting it go. But come January,
time to pay up.
Yeah, it's going to be like the, trying to reach you regarding your car's extended warranty kind of thing.
Trying to reach you regarding your Chipotle debt.
Yep, Chipotle debt. Corey, if you're listening.
Yeah, we're coming for you.
We're coming for you.
All right, so we're talking about peace this week, and I'd love to start a conversation just with like a temperature check. How peaceful are y'all feeling lately? Silence.
Not.
Silence was deafening.
Not. You know, in the last episode, actually, we talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
Not feeling super settled. Mm-hmm. And yeah, anxiety has been part of my journey forever. So personally, not feeling a lot of peace. I think sometimes in just the ministry world, you end up, it's always a struggle to like not, how much of people's, stuff do you take on and absorb, especially, and getting into holiday seasons, there's a lot more for people, like the things like whether it's family dynamics or loss or grief, those things are always heavier for people, I think, in this season. And so you always end up...
It's more at the surface.
Yeah. Whether you want to or not, you kind of take that on. So trying to like how at peace, not really, I think. It's a privilege to be in people's lives, but also it's like, and in their world, it's a privilege to do that. But also you have to watch how much that...
It invites you on an emotional roller coaster.
Yes, yes. Emotional health is a big deal, I think, this time of year. It's really hard to maintain that.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Anxiety right now is just buzzing a little bit.
It's there,
It's around.
LED light in the back.
LED light. Just
or not LED. What
neon,
is it?
Neon.
The
buzzing neon.
The incandescent
signs.
Lights. Yeah.
Yep, it's there. So.
What about you, Isaiah?
I feel like I'm doing pretty good, honestly. I feel like things are steady, predictable. The only thing that is really keeping me on my toes are these two cats that I just adopted.
What?
I know. I was fresh intending to get one, and I left with two. But yeah, they're doing okay. I've had them for like a couple weeks, but they'll still do like crazy things that I'm just like, what? what are you doing? You know, like one of them the other day was just like eating so fast that she just puked.
Oh, I'm like, gosh.
Great. Love that. Praise God. And I don't know. One of them like keeps like scraping the door to like get into my room because he wants to like sleep on the bed with me. And I'm like, ugh.
Which cat is that? What are their names?
Fred and Fran.
Mm. Aww.
They're very sweet.
Sounds like a little old couple.
Yeah.
They're very sweet.
Fred wants to actually like climb in the bed though.
Yeah, he's very cuddly.
That's kind of cool.
But then he's just meowing the whole night because he's like hungry. And I'm like, dude, I literally just fed you.
See, this does not sound like a peaceful home to me. This sounds stressful.
Fred is a little chunky. I'm not going to lie, but
that's a thing.
We love him.
I mean, that's Fred.
Yeah, I'm like, you can fast. You can fast for a day. You'll be fine.
Fast for the holidays. This is a...
Exactly.
Are you bringing the cats with you back to Ohio?
No.
Okay.
I found a friend to feed them.
Nice.
So they'll be good.
Nice.
That's the great thing about cats.
Mm-hmm. That is a thing.
Super easy.
My dog has recently been spending a lot of time up at night or at weird hours. We've been really busy lately, so I feel like this is one of the dog owner things that you're not supposed to admit. But we don't walk him as much as we probably should. Still walk
it's
him.
It's also freezing outside. This is the main thing keeping me from getting a dog. I'm like, that means I have to walk outside when it's like negative 15.
Pass.
I don't want a dog that bad.
I mean,
are there dog treadmills? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah, probably, you could probably just do that. I think a treadmill would suffice. Mm. Any sort of treadmill would do the trick. But
your dog's so big, it needs a regular treadmill.
Yeah, he's walked on treadmills. He's a big boy. But he, not walking him regularly means he's awake at like 3 in the morning going just like
restless leg syndrome,
just pawing at the door. I'm like, oh dude, this is the worst time. And then if like it's 3:30 or like 4 in the morning, I'm not going back to bed.
Yeah,
I'm just awake.
That sounds awful.
It's
also not a peaceful home.
I love that dog. We pray love him though. We love you. Pray for us.
Thoughts and prayers. Thoughts
and prayers. Okay, so when you're thinking about the topic of peace, what comes to mind? What are some of your blind reactions, emotional responses to the idea of thinking about the topic of peace and peacemaking?
You know, for me, I tend to think about aiming small and making peace in the little things that aren't actually the little things, right? God's kingdom is kind of an upside down kingdom. And thinking Sermon on the Mount and blessed are the peacemakers. And what does that mean? But surrounding that verse, is that Matthew 5:9?
Yeah. Matthew 5:6 is Sermon on the Mount.
Yep. So, yep. Yeah. I mean, in that verse, I think there, in that passage, right, there's so much that leans towards blessed are you if you are essentially not.
If you ain't feeling blessed, you actually are.
Yeah, unusually enough, you are. So, but blessed are the peacemakers. It doesn't actually sound like a super, it sounds like a really fun pie in the sky thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like world peace, cool. I think it's a really awful hard job at times.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really hard.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Going dark again. Let's just go there.
This is why we love you,
Lights
Matt.
Out.
Okay, so thinking about that, I'm like, yeah, as I reflect, the people that I know in my life personally or even like throughout history who I would say are like peacemakers who work towards justice, I feel like they actually deal with more friction and contention than anybody else.
Yep.
Like it actually feels the opposite.
Yes.
Like if you want a life that feels peaceful, you're probably not pursuing peace, which feels... It feels backwards. I'm not saying this as like a universal truth. Yeah. I'm just like reflecting on the people that I know in my life who are like, like work in the areas of justice. I'm like, they don't feel peace most of the time, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like this weird flip, you know?
Yes.
I think of like, you could think of some of the heroes throughout history too. Think about like Martin Luther King Jr. Like we would all say he was a peacemaker, you know, he was pursuing these things, but I don't think his life felt very peaceful at all.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like full of contention and disruption and instability in so many different ways.
Not a single peaceful moment for that man.
Probably not.
Really.
No.
Mm.
And so, that's so interesting to think about.
Yeah. Because I guess, stewing more. I love being able to process these things out loud just for a second. My brain goes towards like, we are predestined to be conformed into the image of Jesus. Okay. And so in Jesus's, in Colossians, we are told that Jesus made peace by shedding his blood on the cross.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a peacemaker thing. So where else in the New Testament are we going to read something about making peace other than
death?
Like we are supposed to be, we are going to be conformed into the image of Jesus as a peacemaker,
I'm sweating,
died.
Matt. You know what I'm saying?
Like he died.
Chill.
Like, there's that sense of like that peacemaking thing. You know, for me, it just sounds like in all the relationships in my life, whether that's with my kids or my wife or you guys or whatever. Like, I think there's a sense of in the daily things probably have to die to some extent to bring about that peacemaking. Mm-hmm. Like I think it's easy to assume that making peace is this thing that I'm using to address the problems outside myself.
Mm-hmm.
When actually it's like, I probably actually have to lose a little bit of myself in order to do that.
Mm.
I might be a person who is not a bringer of peace all the time. And so that dying to myself in all sorts of ways and facets, way too many to talk about in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it probably involves me dying to myself over and over and over again.
Or it's going to cost you something. Like loss. Pursuing peace costs you something.
Yes.
Most of the time.
Costly. Mm-hmm. Loss, grief, death. Mm-hmm. all that stuff.
The fun words, all of our favorite things.
Yeah, but that is the part of following Jesus that I think is like, I don't know, to me, like the loss, the death, the grief, all of it is the thing that is the apologetic for Christianity in a lot of ways. Like the first Christians don't renounce Jesus whilst being, you know, threatenings of beheading or
literally watching that happen to their friends.
Mm. Yep. Getting neighbors. Crucified. And Peter's request traditionally is right. Traditionally held that he would request to be crucified upside down because he's not worthy of being killed in the same manner as Jesus.
As the Savior. Yeah.
People actually die for this thing because they believe so much in a resurrection with that. So I don't know. Anyway, that's.
But it's like they didn't get to experience. The weird upside down nature of it is like in the world's frame of reference, they did not experience peace in their life.
Yeah.
And yet somehow they had this incomprehensible peace. I think about the peace that surpasses understanding. Mm,
yeah.
Yep. But it's like even in what looks like the least peaceful circumstance, they somehow held some kind of peace by the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
It's incomprehensible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense.
None. Not at all. Highly illogical, not rational, not self-protective. Like, oh, gosh. Mm. Yikes.
Yeah, so it kind of feels like you can either... Yeah, so it's like there's two different ways. You can either pursue peace by the world's standards, which costs you something.
Yeah, yeah.
Might cost you relationships or out of whatever the case may be, or you can pursue peace by God's frame of reference, in which case you will experience less peace in some ways, but hopefully in exchange for a deeper kind of peace.
Yeah.
By the power of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, it is scary to me at times how like, won't go into this too much, but like, I think, the way we tend to approach politics, for example, seems to me to be sometimes antithetical to peacemaking, because sometimes I think it is way more comfortable and easy to believe that our vote is going to solve the problem. We vote for this person.
And they'll fix it.
Yeah, they'll fix it. They're going to fix it. My vote puts them in power and they will fix it.
I'm asking them to fix it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Perfectly. But that removes us, which in time mostly leads to them not fixing it. Fixing problems that like the Spirit of God, Jesus the King and his kingdom will fix. But as ambassadors of that kingdom, the call is to go and die and like give up of ourselves to enter into those huge sweeping moral topics that we assign to the political sphere. But comfort is such like a powerful allure that we're not willing always to like dive into that. That's myself included. So I'm like, I'm speaking from a chair of a person who has like, when I've cast my ballot, been there like,
Hopefully they can figure this one out.
Yeah, that's great. I think they can. Wait a second. Dang it.
I also have responsibility beyond this.
Agency and culpability and ownership. No.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm done talking now, Isaiah.
What are some of your thoughts around peace and peacemaking?
Yeah, I mean, when I first thought about this topic, I was thinking to myself, I think I'm generally a peaceful person. Mm-hmm. But when I thought about it a little bit more, like, why do I think that? I think it's like, well, I guess I don't like to rub people the wrong way. I typically, like, you know, I don't like to offend people. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure people, like, you know, are chill. And maybe even sometimes, like, I'm indifferent. Like, oh, people are having this debate and I don't really have strong feelings about it, so I'm not going to say anything. Or, and then when I thought about that a little bit more, I'm like, well, I don't know if that's really, being a peacemaker, because I think it's different than, you know, actually pursuing peace, forgiveness, dying to yourself, like all these things that we're talking about, which is the biblical definition of peace. So I think, you know, when I think about peace, maybe my brain goes to not a helpful picture of peace, where it's just like, oh, I'm like, you know, generally people don't have beef with me, or I'm not.
I'm easygoing.
Easygoing.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like I definitely wouldn't fall into the category of people pleaser, but I am also someone who's like, I actually value being like an easy person to get along with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not that I hit that 100% of the time. Certainly there's someone listening to this be like, girl, that is not you.
I remember in high school.
Or recently. I'm just like, yeah, I don't do that perfectly. But I like value being someone that's like easy and enjoyable to be with and to get along with. Mm-hmm. And that is a kind of peace. I think it's like there's just lots of different like frames that we can think of when it comes to this. And like you can have peace in these circumstances that don't seem like it makes sense. Or like John Mark Comer describes like being a peaceful presence as like a non-anxious presence, you know, in an anxious world. Yep. I'm like, that's a different kind of peace, to be like kind of like what you're describing, like unruffleable in some ways.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's just so many different frames. And then like even as we're talking about like biblical peace, that even has different frames. But I feel like most of the time, the word that's translated peace in the Bible, it's usually shalom, right? Which is like, it gives this idea of like wholeness and like rightness, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't think is actually what most of us think about when we think about peace. Mm-hmm. We think about being non-anxious more often than not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without which conflict. It's just a layer. Yeah, without conflict, which it's just, that's a layer of like, that's like being at peace yourself. Mm-hmm. But then the biblical idea extends to the community in some ways, where it's like you are whole and right with one another and with God, but also like we as a people are whole and we're right with one another and with God. And I think both of these things matter, but they're like two different layers of the conversation, you know?
They have to be, it requires both to make that happen. Mm-hmm. That is kind of where my brain goes with the small things, right? Like I think I don't know, you think about world peace and traditionally how, at least in the modern era, I'm a history junkie. And I know you like history too. So like,
love it,
I'm a history junkie. I just like, are you a history junkie a little bit?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you need to get into, here's the hack. The hack is, someone asked me recently, they're like, what do you watch on YouTube? And I'm like, actually, the main thing I watch on YouTube is like random history videos that I watch when you can't sleep. They'll put you right sleep. They'll put you right to sleep. It's awesome.
Oh, man. That's they keep
the
me
gateway.
Awake.
That's the gateway. That's to the gateway.
Yeah, you need to send me some links.
Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast is 5 to 6 hours per episode.
I also thoroughly enjoy Drunk History, which is its own kind
of good, though. It's really good, though. But historically speaking, peace is made to that notion of like, the problem is outside myself.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not me. It's not my people. It's not my tribe.
I need to resolve this stuff out there.
Yes. And that will cause this. If I only neutralize that really bad evil, then there will be world peace.
Which assumes that you are already at peace somehow.
Oh, yep. Go there.
Yep.
But like, again, it's like, okay, but it's actually not about, like, are you creating a peaceful circumstance for you? And also, why do you think that the circumstances need to be a particular way for you to experience peace?
Yep. It is this unique, like, grandiosity of ourselves, like, culturally.
Yeah.
There's a book by a guy named Christopher Lash called A Culture of Narcissism. In discussing like narcissism as like the American as the American,
the primary American thing. Sin.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. And but there is this interesting idea though that like either, and I don't think it's an American thing just solely, but I think there's also a sense of I can view myself as the rescuer or the victim, but I'm never the problem.
Wow.
And I think there's this like gospel turnaround of like actually. You are made good.
You are
made in the image of God. You are made in the goodness and image of God.
And inherently imperfect.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's
brokenness in you and around you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you can't begin to fix the stuff around you unless like the Lord does a work inside you first. Like mm-hmm. navigate that. I think as we talk about people in ministry, this is Hannah Bussey often makes fun of me because my humor is like super niche Christian culture joke. This isn't a joke, but it is niche Christian culture, right? Like if we watch church leaders or political figures with like moral failings, there's this interesting dynamic of like how much more painful that is than like your neighbor did a bad thing. Right. The next door neighbor did a bad thing or whatever. Or no, your pastor or this politician did a bad thing. I think we're expecting
a higher standard.
A higher standard. We're expecting that. And at the same time, like those people can't really do, like there's that inner world does impact our ability to do good peacemaking, mm-hmm. justice, goodness bringing, kingdom of God bringing work in the lives mm-hmm. of other people, in the world. It's not just like a appease God. I want to make God happy. So like I do good things. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know that the brokenness in my life actually impedes my ability to make peace.
Yeah.
I can't, it either makes me a hypocrite or it numbs me to the heart of God and numbs mm-hmm. me to the things of God.
Yeah.
Peacemaking.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
This is a fun conversation.
I know.
We're spicy.
Yeah. Okay. So we're kind of getting into this, but so, Rich Velotis in his Advent devotional, which really inspired the themes of this series. Mm. He paired the theme of peace, which is like kind of, you know, a state you can be in or something, with the verb peacemaking. So what do you think is important about the shift from thinking about the topic of peace broadly to turning towards like the action of peacemaking? Like, what do you think is the, I feel like we're kind of digging into it as we speak, but
yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, just like what Matt was saying earlier, like, Jesus, like when he came and brought peace to reconcile us to himself, like it wasn't just like he was a nice person and was easygoing. It was like he died on the cross to give us peace. And so I think forgiveness and reconciliation are like maybe key parts of pursuing peace, and that costs us something because we don't feel like doing that most of the time. And
it's real.
A verse that this reminds me of is Romans 12:18. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And I remember sitting in a teaching on, this was on like how to be resilient as a pastor, but I think it goes for people, how to stop self-inflicted stress by confronting conflicts to be at peace. And it's as far as it depends on you. So if you pursue forgiveness with someone, that doesn't mean there has to be reconciliation where you have a relationship with again and you're seeing them. You know, sometimes boundaries are helpful, but as far as it depends on you, extending forgiveness and understanding to other people, and then working through your people-pleasing tendencies, your control issues, embracing boundaries, learning how to say no to the right things and saying yes to the right things. There's so much that is in that. But as far as it depends on you.
Yeah, and like that isn't a verse just for pastors. Like that's for all believers, you know? Mm-hmm. And so
Yeah,
I mean, I love that you learned that. And definitely as leaders in the church, we got to model that. And there are so many times where we fail, like church leaders broadly, you know, but like that actually is a call for all believers that we are pursuing peace as far as we are able.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's so complicated.
Yes. Yeah. No, I love that. I mean, to me, the language that I have to sit with a lot is that like, outside myself, inside myself. Mm. And my capacity for outside myself, peace outside myself, grows when I am, I think when I am at least, I forgot who said this, preaching the gospel to myself daily.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. forgot where that phrase.
I think is that Eugene Peterson?
It could be Eugene. It better be.
I'm just. Eugene Peterson, Henry Nowen, one of those guys.
He had such a healthy view of himself as a pastor. Like
yeah.
when he said 90% of pastoring is just observing what God is doing. Mm-hmm. 90%, dude? Tell that to everybody. Like that's 90% is a huge percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the high achieving doers of the world may look at 90% of observing what God is doing and be like, that is, you're getting paid to do that. Like that's a job. That isn't interesting, but there's a lot of starting. Yeah. To answer your question, part of it feels like starting. I view the two separate things as like viewing peacemaking outside myself versus inside myself.
Making peace within myself.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's good. Okay, so what do you think the story of Christmas, of the incarnation and the life of Jesus can teach us about peacemaking? So yeah, we've kind of talked about like Jesus died to bring peace for us. Like that's a high mm-hmm. cost. Is there anything about the Christmas story in particular that you think about when it comes to peace and peacemaking, what we can learn there?
I mean, I know you mentioned last episode, like the story of Christmas is not actually like super pretty and bubbly and nice. Like there was a lot of stuff that happened. It's
real aggressive.
Like, with Herod killing all these firstborns. Like he was, you know, already like, you know, insecure about this Jesus baby, whatever. Like,
mm-hmm.
But then I also think about Jesus, like when he was actually, you know, doing ministry, like he is the prime example of peacemaker. And also he never like diluted the truth. Like there's that verse about, like, I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. Like, it's like, no, the idea is like this forgiveness, this repentance, like it might cause division. Like it shouldn't be easy. Like it might rub people the wrong way but he never ever diluted his message.
Yes.
He was bringing his message of peace in a really, I don't know, different way than what people were expecting. Like they wanted him to be this political figure and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, he never diluted the truth, but he also like loved people super well. So I don't know. There's a lot that comes to mind.
I know. It's interesting to think about. So we read this, these verses from the book of Isaiah pretty much every Christmas, Isaiah 9. Usually it's 6-8 that we read. And in verse 6, it says like he'll be called the Prince of Peace. And yet when you actually look at the life of Jesus in any of the gospels, if I were to circle the moments that seem peaceful, it's very few. Like I've never gone through to highlight that, but it would be pretty minimal compared to the amount of time that he's in conflict with people, you know? Mm-hmm.
And that says something about a person, I think. Where, I mean, it's very early on in his life where people in his general geographic vicinity are ready to toss him off a cliff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many listeners, I haven't had this. Hopefully you guys haven't either. Had a crowd of people from your
want
town
to
growing
stone
up.
Me?
Yeah, that are like throw
hasn't
rocks
happened
at you
yet.
Until you die. Or be thrown off a cliff and just like killed dead.
Yeah.
That's a thing. But you're right.
Yeah. So like what does that teach us about what it means? What peace means, you know? That like the Prince of Peace lived a life.
Yeah.
Marked by what seemed like a lot of internal peace most of the time, like a, you know, like walking around with the peace of God, like that non-anxious presence that John Mark Comer kind of describes most of the time. That being said, I can think of times where it's like, oh, Jesus was heated at these people. But like the Prince of Peace didn't live a life of peace, actually. It's really interesting to think
about. Association of like shalom to peace feels very, very good. Like the Irene Greek verb or God noun for it, and the angels announcing Irene peace on earth for those or to those he favors. Mm-hmm. And that notion of like rest, with rest being associated with peace. And I mean, some definitions, right, might call it tranquility. I'm reading a definition of that, Irene, a state of national tranquility, peace between individuals, harmony, concord, security, safety, prosperity, felicity. That's a good word.
Get that one on a Scrabble board.
Yeah, right. Felicity. Ah, oh, geez. That's a lot of Chipotle. I can do it though. Chipotle's on the line. I can move mountains. But it is fun to think about peace and rest associating that shalom, where I think about Mary as a person who, like, stereotypically in evangelical culture, I think we under talk about. Mm-hmm. And her story, I mean, she's so central to the Christmas story, mm-hmm. as an individual. And I think maybe it's an evangelical or like Protestant, like, swing away from
just
Catholicism.
Trying to not be Catholic.
Yeah, like, we can't talk about Mary lest we be Catholics or something. Yeah. But like, there's this beautiful sense of like, man, she is super archetypal for lots of things in life. Mm-hmm. Like, may it be done
just as you say,
just
Lord.
Just as you say, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. let her rip, God. Like, that's, mm-hmm.
it's wild.
I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. she had to have processed the idea of a scandalous life and the potential of Joseph, like, leaving her and or her getting punished by death. Like, she had to be, she knew mm-hmm. what this was in the Jewish law, and she knew what this meant for her. And I don't know how she says that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's where it's like, there's this peace of God that can come that just surpasses comprehension. It's
the
like
rest,
this doesn't
yes.
make sense. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. She is right with the Lord and whole and secure in herself mm-hmm. in that. And there's like, clearly that's kind of part of her story. Mm-hmm. Like, at no point in the biblical narrative do we see her just losing her mind. Mm. On stuff, mm-hmm. at no point. Mm. So I think I don't know. That's just her response to the angel announcing that you will give birth to a son and he will be called the Most High, the shadow, like the shadow of the Almighty will. Mm. Fear the verbiage.
Yeah.
But that's really, really potent to me.
Yeah.
Joseph's response to that too. We talked a little bit mm-hmm. about that last week too, but the people who should not be responding like that are.
Mm.
They're not, and they're like the
backwards. They've got everything to lose.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're the backwards heroes of the story. Mm-hmm. Not like anti-hero as like, you know, the flawed person who's still heroic in the story, but like, actually they're just not the person that this world would pick to do anything good.
Right.
And they're the ones.
Yeah. But they were yielded. And I think
yielded,
like,
good word.
That there's like a component of peace that is like a deep trust and obedience to God, despite like what seems natural or normal. Like they were like, no, God, I trust you. Like, I have this inner peace doing this because I know you have a plan, and I know ultimately you're going to work all of this out somehow for your glory. And my obedience is just one small way to like take part in what, God, you want to do in bringing peace to the earth and reconciling the earth. I think of Jesus like in the garden where he literally was like, God, if it's within your will, like, would you take this cup from me? Like,
you mind not doing
I don't
this?
Want to die.
Like, I don't want to do this.
But he said, like, you know, yet not my will, but your will be mm-hmm. done. And I don't know, finding peace and knowing like, okay, I'm going to be obedient to God regardless of what this costs me or the image or reputation. And Peter in the, when he was in jail, like, you know, obviously that sucks, but he had this like crazy
peace.
Amount of peace. It's insane.
And then contrast that to use another character in the nativity story. Contrast that with Herod, who's like, there's this prophecy and people are saying these, you know, these guys are saying that it might be true. Better just kill off everybody just in case.
Oh,
like,
yes,
you know, better just murder a bunch of little boys just in case he might come and try to overthrow my like leadership.
Yep.
And like, there just was this panic of like,
this threatens my security in some way.
Whoa.
And like no peace, again, no peace of God to be like, if this is the Lord's will, this is the Messiah, like, like this is good for everybody if it's true, you know?
Yes.
But he was like, can't be good for me because I like my power and my life the way that I've set it up.
Whoa. Yeah, and to make it personal, like how much do we do that in our own lives? Like protecting our sanity, like protect, like, you know, masking our insecurity with like pride, or I need to have power, like I need to feel like I have control and therefore I'm going to like do this or manipulate my situation or get people to agree with me so that I can feel at peace. Yeah. Like, yikes.
Yikes.
That's like, that's like using other people to give you a sense of peace that you're only really able to find in God in the first place.
Yes. But, yeah. Well, that's like, that is an interesting parenting journey in that sometimes where I'm struggling in that at the moment or trying to just being the non-anxious presence or trying to not get trying to recognize what I default deem to be the desired outcome in a situation. Where I pick up my kids from school or whatever, and they have a day's worth of like backed up emotional stuff just from being humans.
And like kids aren't made to like sit and listen all day long. Nope. Like that just, their little bodies are not made for that.
Right.
No, and they gotta release all that somewhere.
Yep, it gets released.
And it's mom and dad and siblings.
Yes, all the time.
And dog.
Yeah, and dog, Yeah, it gets released at my wife. It gets released at me or at the kids, at each other.
Yeah.
And there's this interesting sense of like, at the end of a day, in the moment, I don't always recognize this. In hindsight, sadly, is when I see it more of like, okay, they were just really emotional about a snack after this.
I mean, I would be too.
But totally right. Right.
We all get hangry.
A little peanut butter jelly, I get it. But there's this like, my reaction to that can either be one of, you need to relax and chill out. Which actually doesn't, I know it's small, but like it doesn't validate, in the little things it doesn't validate their emotion or teach them how to like navigate emotional health well. Things like, hey, you can be sad or tired or a little grumpy or hungry, but we can't be mean.
Mm-hmm.
And there I go being mean about their desire for a snack. And really, because it's just because I want my presumed definition of peace.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
When perhaps long-term peace is actually me taking a deep breath and trying to like emotionally shepherd them in the spot of like, I get that. Like, it sounds like it was a hard day. Tell me more about your day. I'll make you a peanut butter and jelly.
It's super hard to wait.
Yeah.
It's like, even just saying that, like even if there's nothing you do, like, oh yeah, it sucks to wait.
Yep. It's really hard.
Or like, it's really frustrating when your sibling gets the last bag of goldfish. I know that's really annoying when that happens.
Even when your coworker gets the last bag of goldfish. Mm-hmm. Or when you get a staff email about Costco cupcakes.
And then you go in there, it's already gone.
That is.
We're children trapped in adult bodies.
That's no joke.
Like truly.
I've had moments where they're like, there's like leftover pizza, or there's like leftover Chipotle. Because Chipotle,
that'll get you every time.
Mm-hmm. Every time. They're like leftover Chipotle from this event in the staff kitchen or something. And I'm like,
it's just the salsa left.
Or that's like the rice.
Like, why?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's just corn, not even the corn salsa.
What is this?
Which I could eat by myself. It's like the roja. It's like there's just spicy red. I'm like,
what am I going to drink this? Like soup? What are we doing here?
What am I supposed to do with this? It's a thing. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's take this a little practical. So how do you think in our daily lives, whether as individuals or as a community, that we could pursue like peace and peacemaking rather than like just waiting for peace to come to us or create our circumstances so that we would be at peace? Like, how can we pursue true peace or be true peacemakers in the sense that we're talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like that's my first thing would be stop and reflect for a second and do reflect honestly and pragmatically. Like, what are the things I'm struggling with right now?
Mm-hmm.
And most likely those things come from, family of origin too. There's that. I say, family of origin, like that's not a huge deal. But like, yes, it comes from that. But also I think so much of our sin and brokenness shows itself, rears its ugly head in the areas where we long for control and long for peace and have our own default ways of getting that, right? Yeah. When you said we're all just children trapped in adult bodies, I think that's actually kind of true, though. Like, jokingly about Chipotle, of course. But, like, there's also in emotional health, there is that sense of we all have ways that we deal with hard moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ways that from childhood we were coping with things. We were taught to do that. My childhood way of coping was to say, just stuff that feeling. No one told me to do that. No one ever coached me to do that, but that was my coping. Stuff that feeling. And when I was a child, that worked really well. That was fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As an adult with interdependent relationships at church and at home, and
less fine.
Very not fine. Dare I say damaging, right? Like, it's actually, it's a thing to constantly have to address. So when I say reflect, I mean, it's that honest, hard work of look inward and look inward and examine some of that stuff. Cause I think the peacemaking overflows out of that.
Yeah.
In the little things, and that matters. Like, in the little things, I mentioned my kids cause that matters a lot. Like, if my three kids are like, if they grow up saying mom and dad like actually worked to bring like reconciliation and peace in our home, they will understand what that means one day.
Yeah.
But if they are rewired a little bit better than I was because we stopped to do that, that's legacy enough. That's great. But I think you can do that in your communities, in your community groups, in your like, whatever you call ministry, whether that's your job somewhere or wherever you, God has you in ministry.
Which is wherever you are.
Wherever
to
you
be
are.
Clear, wherever you exist.
Yes, exactly.
God has intention for you there.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Good word. God has intention for you. Yeah. That's a really good phrase. To me, it does start with that honest, stop looking out the mirror or out the window. Stop looking at, the little stick in someone else's eye. Stop doing any of that and just ask the questions about yourself for a month. Try that for a season and see where that leads.
That's great.
Pregnancy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hearing you say that like growing in self-awareness is absolutely a key
for you to
find a sense of inner peace, understanding your story, why you are the way that you are. Why did that hurt? Like, why am I feeling this way? Like, even being able to acknowledge, like, when you're feeling dissonant with your situation. Like, this is a very dramatic emotional response to what feels like a little thing. Why does this feel that way? But then understanding parts of your story, like, oh, like, that's why. Like, I can name it and then grow from it. I think the Enneagram is a really great tool for understanding that. And I know people have mixed feelings about it. And I'm not about like, I'm a three, therefore I have to be all these things. It's more like just tools. Like, it gives you language to understand parts of your story. And that was a huge thing for me, like growing in self-awareness, starting to find understanding of who I am, why I am the way that I am, why do I respond in certain ways. And that awareness is what led me to grow out of that. And, I actually don't have to respond this way. Kind of shifting gears, like my reaction to, okay, how do we be peacemakers? I think have the conversation with the person.
Yes.
Like, it's so much easier to just brush it off and wait a day until the feeling goes away.
Yeah.
But the next time that person says that thing or does that thing again, then it's all these feelings are bubbling up. And so,
and it's not like, at least for me, it doesn't go back to the same place. It compounds. Absolutely. So it's like the longer you wait, because it's like when it's one thing, I'm prone to this all the time where I'm like, I can let that roll off my back. That's not a big deal. And then the second time it happens, I'm like, wow, that is annoying. I'm going to let it roll off my back, though. I let it last time. I can do it again.
Yep.
But then the 10th time it happens, then it's like eventually I'm going to hit a point where I'm like, I can't stand it anymore. Yep. And then that leads to a way bigger conflict than it would have ever been before.
Exactly.
Whether that's even if it's just in me internally. But I'm like, then it becomes this overwhelming feeling that I just can't resolve it on my own anymore.
A book that I read that was super helpful for me in like, okay, how do I have hard conversations with people is Crucial Conversations.
Oh, it's so good.
So fantastic.
I guarantee Tiffany has it on her desk behind
us
somewhere.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's probably
It's so good. And I love that it addresses like your personal things. Like, you need to work through your own insecurities and figuring out what you really want out of a situation before you you know, bring it to someone. Exactly. Yeah.
There's a difference between having a good conversation and just like dumping your grievances on a person.
Exactly. Yes.
And you need to know the difference.
It's huge. Like in general, I think like if you are in like an emotionally unhealthy place, healthy things will seem scary and wrong and weird to you because it actually pushes up against the ugly brokenness. Mm-hmm. And you won't even know that unless you're like, oh yeah, I have stuff I gotta work on. Why does that? Oh, that thing actually is healthy. Or like bringing up, saying the thing to the person is actually the healthy, normal, really godly thing to do.
Yeah.
Why does it bristle me if someone brings up a reasonable, normal, like, hey, you said that and it kind of hurt my feelings? Why would that bother me?
Mm-hmm.
Should that bother me? I don't think it should. Mm-hmm. But I'm like tense and anxious and whatever about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have to move. It's like in a way we do have to move towards healthy conflict and healthy conversations if we want peace ultimately.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, then we're just letting it bubble over. And what we think is peace of like, oh, I'm just going to forgive and forget. Like, oh, it's fine. Like, whatever. That's actually going to lead to less peace ultimately rather than just addressing it for what it is and having the conversation. And then after that, it's like, oh, maybe we can move towards peace.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. And sometimes I feel like also it needs to be said that sometimes we need additional outside support, like a counselor or a therapist or something like that to help you who's an actual third party neutral.
It's great.
Because I think sometimes too where this can blur is like, okay, I need to process this with somebody. And then it becomes gossip and it becomes this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Validate how I'm feeling about the situation. Yes. So I don't have to do anything.
Oh, this actually doesn't help at all. This increases conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, or it's even like the self-evaluation, like to some extent, we're able to do that ourselves.
Yeah.
And then there comes a point where it's like to really like drill down into the deep layers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just need another person. You need a therapist or a counselor or someone. So
And it is so valuable because like, I mean, especially now, that's a great point, Christian, because now like there's it feels like a modern therapeutic revolution maybe where therapy speak is everywhere in like the common vernacular. And
we all think we're little therapists now.
Like this conversation, like if, you know, I'm not a trained mental health expert or therapist, right? I'm just also a broken person who like has had to process a lot and still has to process a lot. But there's like there is a sense of like, it's easy to label people and throw around terms.
Or even yourself for that matter. Or to do that without deep self-reflection. Like to be like, oh, I'm just like that because I have this diagnosis. And it's like, well, you can get tools. You can develop skills to like become a healthier, more balanced person. Like you don't have to, that's a factor in your life.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you can't have peace or pursue peace or whatever the case may be.
Sometimes the trained professional in it they're really great to actually recognize the pattern. If you really want to put a label on it, they might actually be able to point you, let them do it because they know how, but there's that, In all sorts of ministry situations, like I think of ministry, like local church ministry situations when I think about peacemaking, because that's just where my job is vocationally.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be anywhere, in any job, in any situation, any sphere where God has intention for you, as you said, there will be, if you are genuinely pursuing the peacemaking, I think there will be issues, situations, people that come up against the non-healed stuff in your life.
Yeah.
And you, practically speaking, that can be antithetical to peacemaking. Like I think Isaiah and I run weekly rehearsals for worship arts. And that is on average 5 to 6 other people on a band who bring in the middle of the week, they bring their stuff into that space.
Yeah.
And generally like those rehearsals go really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But like let's a hypothetical situation. Let's say somebody walks into a rehearsal, because we're not just like musicians and performers, right? Like,
you don't just come and play songs.
Just play music. We're trying to like emcee the presence of God on a Sunday through this music and teach at the same time.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot going on. And so there's this, it's a higher aim than just the art, though that's important too. And
it's
just
more than singing.
Yeah, there's more.
It's worship.
So there's this sense of like, oh man, I on a Wednesday, if somebody walks into a rehearsal, then they're like super aloof or like snapping at people or something. If let's say hypothetically I've got this, like an uncomfortability with conflict or like, which I do.
Relatable.
Relatable, but like uncomfortability with conflict or whatever, or a temper, let's say, and somebody snaps at me, it is antithetical. Just trying to give a real life example. It's antithetical if I snap back at them and try to overpower them with my anger or my temper because they had a bad day and it came out on us. It's antithetical if I'm like, well, good job on your anger. You didn't practice your part this week. So maybe try like like showing up and doing this right before whatever. And like, now we don't talk to our people like that.
Totally.
But like there are places and there are places and situations and people where they do talk like that. And they do like the unhealed stuff comes out and really performs antithetically to peacemaking and the mission of the kingdom of God in our world. So like that's, you won't know any of that unless you've reflected, maybe seen a counselor or anything like that. You need to reflect that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be so, what was I going to say? Like you'll just end up being really defensive and you'll take everything personally.
You'll be reactive.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't you can no longer respond thoughtfully. You're kind of prone to react. Okay, one more thing because it didn't come up that I'm thinking about when I think about how we can pursue peace, and I don't want to present this as like an overly simplistic thing because I just I think all these topics are incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
But I don't want us to de-emphasize also the power of prayer in like peacemaking and like reminding ourselves of the peace of God and having that. It's like I actually think there is something so good that happens in our spirit when we both present our desires and our requests before God to be like, this is where I'm not feeling peace, where I'm not seeing it, whether it's in a personal way or like you're praying for the conflicts going on around the world or or here in the United States. Like there's just, there's so much actually that it feels overwhelming. But I think it's both good to be reminded that like God actually has power to do something about these things.
Yes.
That he desires peace also. Like, and I think there's something when we present those requests that like it does something to us. And then always like, again, I think about the model of Jesus, which is a good place to go. But thinking about like his death, the moment, like right before, you know, when he's praying in Gethsemane and he's like, you know, like high amounts of anxiety, like crazy, scared, worried, anxious, all of these things. And he was still able to pray, not my will, but your will be done. And and I think there's something really helpful that we can learn from that and that we can imitate in that to put all these requests, like, please, if there's any other way or God, do something about this. Like, I know that you care about this. Fix this problem. And then to say, not my will, but your will be done. It's not like a magic bullet for peace by any means. It's not like, and now I am at peace. But there but there is something actually that can happen in our spirit to be like, I want you to do something about all of these things. If there's anything you want me to do about these things, make it evident to me. And not my will, but your will be done. That's what's most important. And I think sometimes we have to say that even when we don't mean it, because eventually you will mean it. And it can bring peace. So I think it's like, don't underemphasize the power of prayer, therapy, having hard conversations. These are all good things. And also sometimes like when it comes to like the big, like, oh, we need peace in this big way, like national scale, global scale, whatever. It's like, don't underestimate the power of like doing something. You probably can't fix the whole thing. A lot of these problems are God-sized problems. That even like politicians, as you were saying earlier, like they can't fix it either. It's so much more complicated, so much bigger, because we've got problems with the human heart that like literally only God can resolve that. But to do something can be really helpful, whether that's donating to a cause, speaking up about it, pursuing relationship with people, whatever the case may be, but like pray and do something. It's probably like what I would say about being peacemakers. All right. Last question. This is going to be a long one, so you're welcome, everybody.
I'm ready.
Okay, so I gave my hot take last week about the worst Christmas music, but I don't want to be the only one on the hot seat, so now I'm inviting you guys to share what is the most overrated or awful Christmas music.
If you missed it last week, why don't you tell us again?
As a reminder,
it's lived in my head rent free, but
I know I'm like waiting to be called into HR at this point.
It's over.
my hot take, my Christmas music hot take is that I really hate Amy Grant Christmas music.
Yeah.
And it is so many people's favorite, including my mom. And yeah, I feel like I've nearly been, been excommunicated.
Feels like
family
one of those things
times.
Where right now there's something coming up against my unhealed self, and I'm trying to like, check that, you know.
Love
you know?
It for you, but if I walk into a store and they're playing Amy Grant music, I'm like, I'll come back later. I don't need it that
Did
bad.
You know her song "Baby Baby" is actually just about a baby?
Oh, I don't know this one.
You don't know Baby Baby?
No, I'm telling you, I really avoid Amy Grant.
Baby Baby. Baby. So she was like the Christian pop darling for a while. And then when she wrote Baby Baby, it was like this like kind of like 80s synthy groovy tune.
I will say I do like the synth.
Okay, okay.
Like love that.
Yep.
The only exception to my Amy Grant rule is Emmanuel.
Yep, totally.
That song is a banger.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ever. And it's the synth. That's what gets
me. It is the synth, yeah. I took my mom to see an Amy Grant show in March. Long story short, and it was great. But she intro'd the song Baby Baby, and I like she got in trouble for this song because it was like at the time it didn't sound Christian. She was introing the song. She's like, yeah, I just wrote this, you know, after the birth of one of my kids. And I was like, wait, the song Baby Baby is just about a baby? It's not about
it's
like
right
a romantic
there in the
interest.
Name.
It's just a baby. It's just literally about your child. Mm. Well, that was a revelation to me. Anyway, it's Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney. Don't even do it. Don't even sing it.
Are you triggered?
I am. Because like a man from the Beatles. The Beatles. They're not my favorite rock band. They're many people's favorite rock band. I'll take Led Zeppelin over the Beatles 11 times out of 10. It's not even possible mathematically, but that's how many times I do it.
You feel so strongly.
But they're like a legendary group. Many hits. I mean, so many
broke
hits.
Records. Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. Changed the game.
What on earth happened in the making of that song? Like who did somebody just like, it feels like in the recording studio, Paul McCartney, because every good artist has bad ideas too. I think somebody was just like, oh, it's Paul McCartney. It's got to be fine.
You sometimes need someone to tell you no.
Yeah. It feels like one of those things someone didn't tell him no on. I cannot, but also I'm going to wait. I have one more, but I'm going to wait.
No, I don't really have hot takes with Christmas music. I kind of just coexist with it. Like whatever.
You just feel neutral.
Yeah. But I mean, Matt and I were talking about this the other day, but if I do have to sing Joy to the World by Phil Wickham one more time, I think I'm going to crash out.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be in the set list sometime leading up, right? Yep. Right? Don't you think?
November 30th. It's coming. Now, I do have one that's a semi-hot take because many people feel an affinity to this song. I do not.
Mm.
I might even send this episode to very close friends of mine.
Just for this last.
Not because they like this song, but because they will troll me with it. And that is the song Christmas Shoes.
Oh, I hate that song.
Oh, that was my song.
Okay, was it actually though?
Oh, yeah. I'm being brought back to like the third grade computer lab where I like listened to this song on repeat.
My brother was like this.
The third
grade. Why is this a thing?
No, it was that
I'm
song.
I'm like, why do you enjoy
it was so good.
Hurting yourself?
I
like pain.
I mean, it feels, I mean, obviously like, two episodes on this. I've only ever
seen
down.
Have you seen the music video? Because I feel like I that makes it
there's
even more intense.
I don't remember.
There's a whole movie.
Yes, I have not made it through the whole movie because I just couldn't. But
to expound, I mean, the song does plenty of expounding itself. I'm not sure how you like stretch it out to an hour and a half feature length film. That's crazy. But like there is this sense.
Hallmark is. they can do miraculous things.
I'm into Hallmark movies though.
Oh,
we have an Amazon. Oh, we have a subscription
no,
for Hallmark
me.
Plus that we reactivate.
Not Hallmark. Not you're paying for this.
$7.99. We reactivate it.
Wow.
Every
Christmas.
Year because it's just too good. Some of them are just. Like, it's the same actors, too.
I know.
So it's just wild. But
it's like he was your brother in the last one, and now he's your long-lost love.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's too weird.
It's weird. But I feel like Christmas Shoes does – I get the spirit of, like, generosity in it. But, like, real, gritty, like that. I just feel like I gotta be careful because I gotta be careful about talking about it. It just feels like you can't put this in a song and like sing about it and like make money off of it. It just feels a little too heavy.
Made money off of me. I've listened to that so many times.
it just feels too heavy. It's like
they should just
too
like
much.
Play it at the bell ringing and like everybody will just empty their pockets, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
it's just like, oh, it just hurts my heart.
We should do it at church. I think, yeah, no, man. It'll get people tithing more.
There's like the little kids choir at the end of it. And I'm like,
yeah, it's like, what are we doing?
Can't do it. I just can't do the song. It's too heavy. It's too much. It's heavy-handed. The song is heavy-handed. Maybe that's what it is. It just feels heavy-handed.
I know. Whoever wrote that song, it's like, are you okay? We should check on them.
Bob?
They're not okay.
I'm pretty sure it was Bob Carlyle. Hold on.
I thought it was like Chapman or something.
Hold on.
Regardless, there's something like off in their spirit, I think.
Off in their spirit?
Not like, shoot. It's not like they're bad. Shoot. I'm just like, they are not well. We need to help them.
It's by New Song, who New I Song. Think did, I'm pretty sure, hold on, let me see. I'm pretty sure New Song did another big hit like that too. It feels like it's the same. No, never mind. I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the same guy who wrote Butterfly Kisses.
Oh, it could be.
I thought it was the same guy.
That could be. He just loves his kids. I don't know. Maybe it's normal. It just feels wild to me.
It just feels really sad. I have practical questions about why that kid's at the store.
By themselves on Christmas Eve.
It gets,
Merry Christmas, everyone.
It gets way heavier and darker the moment you dip your toe slightly past the surface of the water, you're like, whoa, this is
it's 80s. A lot.
It is heavy and dark. Anyway.
So if you need to feel something, go put that on.
Okay.
On that lovely note, it has been a joy recording these with the two of you. But actually, next week we are covering the topic of joy and rejoicing. I'll be joined by Hannah Bussey and Trevor Kleinmeier, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah. More joyful people than us.
Definitely carry more joy than me.
I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. We did say, just book us for whatever. And then you did.
And I was like, I know my people.
Sorry, this is just a really meta moment where I'm like, she knew what she was doing the whole time.
Whoa. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Anyway.
On that note, hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving and you're enjoying the Advent season. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Next Steps. Don't forget to check out the show notes for a list of resources if you'd like to keep the conversation going. If you want to learn more about how to get connected at Blackhawk or simply find tools to help you grow, check out blackhawk.church/hub. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend and subscribe so you won't miss future episodes. Until next time, let's keep following Jesus together.